3 of our series called Loud and Clear, where we're looking at the things that we communicate to this world, to the people around us, and if we're asking the question, man, am I coming in loud and clear to the people I interact with on an everyday basis? Some of us come in very loud, but we're not saying a whole lot, right? And some of us are trying to be very clear. So we just got to try and connect loud and clear. And week 1, we talked about that our words are powerful, they're dangerous, and they're revealing. And we were challenged to watch the flow of things that come out of our mouths. Last week, we looked at the things we transmit with our lives to the world around us. We transmitted things every day through our body, through our attitudes, and through the written words. And so we were challenged then to transmit a life that honors and praises God. Today, we're going to be talking about a specific word or type of word, actually, that we communicate on a daily basis with people. And those are angry words. We transmit angry words. This week, we're going to look at a story in Matthew chapter 5. We're going to get there in just a second, but you can turn there now if you want. Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 21. There's a Bible in front of you. Go ahead and pull it up on your phone if you want. The words will be on your screen, whatever helps you with that. Dr. Les Carter is an author, and he's a psychotherapist, and he wrote a book called Good and Angry, and he writes this. Because of the sophistication of our language, people are able to use all kinds of words to describe anger, so it doesn't sound like anger. People aren't afraid to say that they're anxious or bored or depressed or frustrated. They will say that they are anything but angry. A lot of times we don't even like or even admit to the fact that we are angry or we could possibly be angry, but that doesn't negate the fact that our anger wells itself up every single day and damages the things around us. And over and over, medical and scientific research has shown that the anger in our lives does a lot of damage to our bodies and to our minds and to our health. And the Bible talks a lot about anger. The Bible talks a lot about anger, that if it's not dealt with quickly and appropriately, it'll ruin our lives and the lives of those around you. So let's look at this together. Matthew chapter 5, verse 21. You have heard that our ancestors were told, you must not murder. If you commit murder, you are subject to judgment. If you are even angry with someone, you are subject to judgment. If you call someone an idiot, you are in danger of being brought before the court. And if you curse someone, you are in the danger of the fires of hell. Those are pretty heavy words, are they not? I mean, come on, Jesus. Like, I'm not killing anybody here. Like, I'm a good person. What are we talking about? Like, why would you say all of this negative stuff? But it's interesting to me that Jesus in this point says, you have heard, and he doesn't say you have said. So what it tells me is when we talk about communicating, we need to know our audience. What it tells me is he's speaking to a group of people who are there to learn and to understand and grow. He's not speaking to the priests. He's not speaking to the teachers of that time. And he says, your teachers have been telling you for years and years and years. This is what they have been saying. And it's not wrong. It's really important to do what they were teaching. Don't kill people. That's really important. Don't ignore that fact. But there's more to it. There is more than just don't kill people, because it doesn't get to the heart of the law. It's simply addressing the outward action. It's simply addressing it on face value. See, can we all agree, don't murder? That's a good law. Can we just agree on that? Can we have that foundation together? That's just a good law to have, right? So, but the problem was, it shows that the teachers on some level at that time were so focused on the law that they lost the heart of God. They disconnected themselves from the heart of God because they were just taking this law at face value for what it says, which at the heart of it isn't bad. But they're saying the law is simply an outward act. It's just what we do that affects our relationship with God and makes us right. It's the outward act. But Jesus is saying there's more to it. We need to do an evaluation of our inside of our heart. And so Jesus is saying that the real meaning of this law of not murder is anger. He's saying, hey, humankind, you have an anger issue. You need anger management courses. But oftentimes we misread the scriptures to just read whatever we want it to say. that it'll fit into our understanding and our narrative because we fail to look inward. We oftentimes don't look inside of ourselves to understand what our heart is at and where we are at with God. And we just focus on, as long as I'm putting a good face forward, as long as I am not killing people, I'm okay. But Jesus is saying it's more, because the real issue with anger is bitterness. It's wrath. It's physically hurting other people. It's physically hurting yourself. It's slander of somebody's character, that same person who was made in the image of God. It's killing the person's happiness. It's envy. Anger is more, and murder is more than just a simple act. So instead, Jesus is saying it's not just the act of violence. Jesus addresses the cause of the evil action. So on the other hand, we just simply say, if you're guilty by the act that you make, right? Which makes a lot of sense. We're not going to throw somebody in jail just for being angry, right? That would be ridiculous. But Jesus is saying this, our evil thoughts, those are what's to blame for the action that we take. Now, over the last few weeks, we talked a lot about communication and understanding, and we've tried to get to the heart of things. We've tried to understand what is going on. We've tried to understand what Jesus said in Luke 6. He says, what you say flows from what is in your heart. And we tried to understand Proverbs 4:23, guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life. Over and over, this was Jesus' message. It's not just the outward act that we need to understand. There's a heart issue. So there's a couple consequences that happen when we don't understand our anger, when we don't address the heart of the issue, which is our anger, when we take a negative approach. There's some consequences. The first consequence is that our angry words send a message. Okay, our angry words are going to send a message. Now, this past week, I don't remember what day it was. This past week, my kids started to interrogate my wife and I over dinner. It was the most random thing, and it started with my daughter. She had this innocent question. She says, Dad, did you date anybody before you knew Mom? And I'm like, oh, you know, that whole look, that's pretty much what happened. It threw me off. And I'm like, yeah, I did, but so did your mom, you know, and like deflection, right? Let's put it back on her. And it was just, and it led to this series of weird questioning, like, what is going on in this interrogation? Next thing I know, we're opening the treasure chest of history, and we're taking out baby books and seeing pictures. Oh, look, here's my high school picture, and the kids are making fun of our clothes and our hair, and I'm like, what is going on? This is unraveling. I don't understand it. But then my wife finds the letters. These are good letters. This is when we were courting. The young love letters. Actual letters. So kids, here's what we used to do. We used to take a piece of paper, take a pen or pencil and write words on it, stick it in an envelope, a stamp, send it through the mailbox. The mailbox is that thing at the end of your driveway that people, okay? So we did that. And we made an intentional point of communicating a message. We wanted to send a message, this message of young love. Some of it was very, very clear. Hey, you're hot. Some of it was a little more subtle. What you doing next summer? Right? But either way, we wanted to convey a message. It was purposeful. It was intentional. We wanted to convey a message. That was 18 years ago. 19. We were dating. We've been married for 18. I know how long we've been married. It was dating. Since then, here's the unfortunate part. Since then, the messages that we have communicated have not always been full of love and affection. There have been words that we have shared with each other that have caused a lot of hurt. We have hurt each other by the things we have said. And I just thinking about those things that and those times where we're like those letters that come out of the young love, and then thinking where we're at now and the deep connected inner understanding of who each other are, we have had the ability to cause a great deal of hurt in each other's lives. And we have. And we can bring a lot of joy. Don't get me wrong, it's not just anger management the whole time. But there's a great deal of hurt. Civil War veteran and author and poet Ambrose Bierce once said this, "Speak when you're angry, and you will make the best speech you will always regret." See, the things that we say in our anger or when we're hot-headed, they've done more damage to the other person and ourselves than they have ever provided us a relief. They've done a lot of damage. Now look at what it says in Proverbs 15, 1 and 2. A gentle answer deflects heart anger, but harsh words make tempers flare. The tongue of the wise makes knowledge appealing, but the mouth of a fool, I love this, belches out foolishness. That's what it sounds like, and that's how it feels. It's just gross. The things that we say in our anger when we're hot-headed have done a lot of damage. And when we speak, we send a message. Every time we speak, we send a message, and what are we going to communicate? Again, Proverbs 15, verse 4. The soothing tongue is a tree of life, but a perverse tongue crushes the spirit. Okay, let me ask you. When you were a kid and you scraped your knee and had a boo-boo, and you went to mom or you went to grandma, and mom or grandma pulled out the ointment or the spray. Yeah, I'm avoiding that stuff. That stuff stung, right? Like I'd get a cut on my knee and I'd go and I wouldn't tell mom. I'd just run to a corner because that spray hurt more than my scrape. It was terrible. But this passage says the words are a soothing ointment. It soothes. So what are our words sending? They're going to send a message. Are they going to be a message that stings, or are they going to be a message that soothes? The next thing we're going to learn is that angry words crush. It is not positive. You know, anymore now it's like, crushed it. Yeah, that's not what we're talking about, okay? When we get angry, we start throwing around words. We just throw them out, and we don't even care. They're just filled, and they're uncontrolled, but they're just emotional because we don't think or take time and pause and just stop. We don't do any of that. We just react to the heat of the moment about what's going on. It's kind of like these two in the video. Take a look. I don't know what that was all about. But how often do those escalate? Like, it started like, you be quiet. No, I'm four, you're not four. You started, no, go home. How often do they escalate? Get out of my house. How dare you say that? In the heat of the moment, the words that come out are just a reaction, and we don't stop and pause to think about it. They reflect our character. As much as we try to just get a relief and get the other person to hear us, they reflect the character of what's in our heart. And oftentimes they come out without us thinking. This past week, I saw a little video of probably a fifth grade boy. He learned his dad had cancer, and so to share in the life of his dad, he gave himself a beautiful haircut and shaved his head. And then got to school, and he didn't get the reaction he was hoping for, and all the kids started teasing him. Boy, you look dumb. You look stupid. Why'd you do that? And making fun of him. And it was a terrible reaction because the kid started kind of acting like this. Okay, Proverbs 16. Look what it says. Scoundrels create trouble. Their words are a destructive blaze. A troublemaker plants seeds of strife. Gossip separates the best of friends. Those kids were kind of acting that way. They were creating trouble. And there are times we just don't do a good job of controlling the things that come out of our mouths. and we can crush people with our words. Now, maybe I'm being a little vain here, but I don't think I'm a scoundrel, right? I don't think that's a term I'd ever use for myself. But there was a time where, so my son came to me one day and told me, he said, "Dad, this is what I want to be when I grow up. This is what I want to do." Now, let me tell you, a good father would have said, "Wow, that's so cool. Tell me more about it." But then there's me. And I said, not good things. And I crushed him. I hope we've recovered. But I crushed him. See, the things that we say, we don't stop and pause to think about. And we're critical. Oftentimes, we're in relationships, marriage, friendship, coworker, classmates, it doesn't matter. Now, there are bound to be times where, and this goes back to what Doctor said earlier, we're going to be frustrated. We're going to be annoyed. In fact, we're going to be downright angry at them. And oftentimes, the first thing we do when we get that place is we just crush them with our words. We take to social media and talk about our incompetent spouse, our incompetent coworker, that classmate who acted like this. Even if it's not social media, we'll gather around the water cooler at work. Or we'll sit in our book club and have a conversation. We'll sit around the lunch table. And pretty soon the things that we're saying about people or to people are very crushing. And we start condemning them. See, we go looking for attention and affirmation from all of these avenues. And you know what? We're not going to, I tell you what, I'll just deal with it later. I'll deal with the consequences later because right now I'm angry and I need to get it off my chest. But we don't realize that the things we have said, the way that we have responded, are currently crushing those people, currently hurting them. See, we're just thinking about ourselves. We're just thinking about getting it off of our chest. I need to release. I need to get this out of me. You don't realize what they did to me. Again, it speaks to the character of us and what is in our hearts. We use our words as a scoundrel to fan these flames of frustration and just create strife. Proverbs says that we plant seeds in the lives of people with our words. Now, we're surrounded by the farm. We understand that when you plant a seed, it germinates. It doesn't pop up out of the ground right away. But a healthy seed takes time, and it germinates, and it grows. The words we plant into other people's lives will not always take root right away, but they'll germinate over time. And now all of a sudden, it's going to pop up in their lives and start showing itself in certain ways, not always healthy, but they're going to sprout up maybe in a negative way, but they're going to grow strong. Now, to finish the story of this young man, the principal came into the classroom and addressed the class and told the class, "Hey, look, this is what's going on. This young man's dad had cancer." And we got to remember that we don't always know what people are going through. And a really cool thing I thought that, and this is just, again, speaks high volumes in my opinion about teachers and educators, is that that principal had the young man shave his head as a sign of solidarity. I thought that was a pretty cool thing. But another thing we're going to learn is that angry words are going to destroy. So they're going to crush and they're going to destroy. Oftentimes, though, you know, when we get angry, it doesn't last long, does it? I mean, we try to go around the stuff. Yeah, I get angry, but I just get it out of the way and I let go, right? The trouble is, in those brief moments of anger, a lot of damage can be done. In those moments of anger, when we're just fed up and angry, boom, we say something. Or we do something in response and it just comes out quickly and we don't take the time to think. We just react. Now I love baseball. So in baseball, you learn to react. Because if you're in the field and the ball is hit to you, you react to the ball. You don't know where the guy's going to hit it. If you're batting, you don't know what the pitcher is going to pitch. So you react to the ball. Reacting in baseball is really, really good. Reacting when you're angry, not so much. It does more damage. There's a public speaker addressing this audience, and he was talking about anger, and he was talking about tempers. And after the presentation, this lady came up to him and says, "Yes, I hear what you're saying, and I've got a little temper, I'll admit it, but it's over really, really quick." And after explaining this away and talking to him, the speaker says, "Yes, I understand that your temper may end quickly, but so does a shotgun, and it blows everything to pieces. The words that we say, even if they're temporary, even if they come out as a reactionary, have the power to destroy. Look at Proverbs 12, verse 6. The words of the wicked are a murderous ambush, but the words of the godly save lives. Now, one of my favorite movies growing up was a movie in 1984 called Red Dawn. Some of you may have seen this movie. I love this movie. It was great. It was during the Cold War, and it was this movie about where what would happen if Russia invaded the U.S. and Russia invaded the U.S. and took it over, and they were making their way across country, and they're going to dominate the United States and make it a second Russia or whatever. But there's this group of young people, this group of renegades, and they were going to thwart the Red Army. So there's this one scene where the Red Army's coming through with a couple tanks and some soldiers, and they see this young lady, and they start chasing her through the field on foot. And after she gets to a certain point, now, what the Russians didn't know is that the other guys dug holes in the ground and cover it with lids. So as this gal runs past it, the guys pop up out of the ground and ambush the Russian soldiers and take them out. I'm like, yeah, get those Russians. It was cool. Loved it. Ambushes work really, really well in war. That's what they are for. That is what an ambush is for. It's effective and it's dangerous. See, in life, though, an ambush is also effective and it is also dangerous. The verse says our words are like a murderous ambush. A murderous ambush is a targeted attack. It's an attack that specifically targets certain people, and we see it every day in schools and in the workplace and everywhere. Look at it in schools now. A young person gets braces. Maybe they're in an environment where they don't have clean clothes. Maybe they don't have lunch. Maybe they're just not participating in a certain sport or an activity, and now they're criticized by their classmates. Boy, you smell. Boy, you look stupid. Why aren't you doing this? You're no good, are you? And there's targeted attacks. We see this all the time in relationships. Let's take a married couple, for example. Every single one of us in here have a button, or two, or three, right? We have buttons that can be pushed in our lives. And there is nobody better at finding the button quickly than those that are close to you, particularly your spouse. They know what the buttons are, where to push them, how fast to push them, and how hard to push them to get the response they want, right? That's what they do. They push these things. Now, I'm going to make some broad generalizations, okay? Now, a man has a button that is closely tied with the not wanting to be controlled, okay? Men have this button that is closely tied with, we don't like to be told what to do. We're kind of all sorts of things that way. Stubborn, that's a good one. But how does this play out? Okay, so women, you've done some very lovingly things and just offered suggestions. They just came across, maybe this is a way to help and maybe offer more clarity and direction. But as stubborn men, all we hear is you're trying to control me and dictate what's happening. Like it or not, that's where we jump. Women, there's this button that is closely connected with a not wanting to feel abandoned, that relationships don't want to be disconnected. Okay, so what happens is you're in the heat of the moment, you're in an argument, and men, what we do 80% of the time is we run away, we leave, either shut down or physically leave. Now all of a sudden, she feels disconnected, and she feels like something's happened. So what does she do? She pursues it and pushes it more. And there's a cycle, and it just cycles all around. And all instead of hearing all of this stuff and seeing all of this stuff, now he feels more controlled. He feels more shut down. So, and if he feels more, she feels more disconnected. So she pushes harder to try and says, well, if he's not going to think about me, I'm going to make him think about me. And she pushes, and he pushes away. And there's a cycle. We have buttons. We all have these buttons, and most of these buttons start as an argument about something within us, something where do these things come from? They come from the heart. They come from those things and those messages that have been placed on our hearts for years and years and years. Go back to the time where you had braces. Go back to the time where your clothes didn't get clean. Go back to the time where you didn't participate in the popular sport. And those words that were passed along to you, and it's not even just in school, a lot of times it's parents. As parents, we have some destructive words. Maybe the words like, well, we never really wanted you. Are you really that stupid? If I told you once, I told you 1,000 times. You'll never be worth anything anyways. And we start to write these messages on our hearts. And we ambush our kids, we ambush our spouses, we ambush our coworkers, our friends at school, our teachers. We just ambush them with our words. And all those angry words start to be written on our hearts. And pretty soon we start to identify as that we're worthless. I can't be any good. I'm not going to be great at anything. I'm a complete failure. And as a young person, we receive all these messages, and we start to write them on our hearts and in the hallways, and we start to react to those buttons. We start to react in negative ways and pushing back, and we start maybe being angry and violent. We start to be negative. We start to deflect our emotions onto other people. We start to take negative words and add them to other people. But in all of these situations, here's the deal. Those cycles can be broken, and it only takes one person. It only takes one person for somebody to say, I'm not going to run away. I'm not going to push. I'm not going to forward that text about that person. I'm not going to join into the conversation about this person. Instead, I'm going to speak life into somebody. Proverbs 12:18 says this, some people make cutting remarks, but the words of the wise bring healing. So do our words bring healing and ointment, or do they bring ambush and sting? So here's our challenge. Every week we've been given a challenge. We try to challenge you to think and apply this. So here's the challenge. Think before you say it. Every one of us, I think, have either heard this or said it at some time, and it's not rocket science, but it's one of the hardest things to put in place. Because in the heat of the moment, you don't want to think. You just want to react. Because I feel attacked. I was put in a corner, right? But to pause, to think, and then react, that's vital. See, we need to understand that our angry words can do a whole bunch of damage. So again, Proverbs 4:23, guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life. Your entire life, people are going to start writing things on your heart. Many of you have had things written on your heart that you're holding on to and you're harboring. And they're destructive. But you know what? Here's the great thing. It only takes one. Because you have the opportunity to write things on people's hearts. You have the opportunity to choose your words, choose your actions to write something on somebody's life that can change their course. And you can remind them who they are. That they are a forgiven child of God, that they are loved, that they're not worthless. You have that power through your words. So we're going to use our words to write hope. We're going to use our words to write healing on people's hearts. And we're going to slow down. We're going to take a moment to think before we say that word, send that email, send that text, or respond. The challenge is hard, but we can do it. Would you pray with me? God, you know what? If somebody comes at me, I really just want to respond. I just don't really feel like stopping and thinking because I feel like I'm pushed into a corner. But God, you've called me to use my words in a way that don't ambush, that don't hurt. In fact, you said my words are an ointment, that they're medicine for people. There's so many of us who have had things written on our hearts for so long that are scars, that are hurtful, that tell us a message about who we are, which is not who you say we are. You say we are forgiven. You say we are loved. You say we are changed. You say that we are your child. Father God, help me to use my words this week to write onto the hearts of the people I come in contact with hope and healing found in you. And I can be that person to break some cycles. God, I admit that I have messed this up royally in my family, and in my relationships. And there are times that I have reacted and I have spouted off, and I have had to do so much work to restore that work, that relationship. And some of them have never been fixed. Father, forgive me. So God, as we go from here, we thank you so much for the women in our lives. That means so much to us. Thank you for the healing that they have brought into our lives. Moms, stepmoms, friend, aunt, cousin, coworker. Thank you for those women. Thank you so much. And God, as we go from here, may your name be praised. May we continue to take our hearts and protect them and change them for you, so that what comes out of our mouths is holy and is a life that is changed for you. Father, we give it to you.